You work for SNL? Well, yeah. I'm Lauren Michaels. So that's good to know that.
Well, that's awkward. I probably should have recognized you.
You should have. Well, I didn't even know who I was. Mm. You work for SNL too?
I do. I've been writing for quite some time. It's Pete Davidson.
Oh, Pete Davidson?
Yes. Nice to meet you.
Not very hot. So we are looking for new ideas. And I thought that, you know, our show's been going kind of a different direction.
Yeah.
And I thought it would be great if maybe we made something that was actually funny.
Ooh. Mm.
What is that?
We tried that like 20 years ago.
And how did that work for you?
Yeah, just a lot of people got angry and it didn't work.
I'd much rather, you know, be a slave to my political opinions and my ideology and sort of put that in the show. I think this next week we run an entire segment around, you know, Big Bird and ivermectin. We call it a horse drug, you know, so everybody knows.
Yeah.
You don't think the laughter can help bring us together and help heal America?
I mean, are we really trying to bring people together anymore? Like, who's doing that anymore?
Hey. Yeah. No, that's not the way we say it.
Yeah.
What we do is we bring people together, just the right people. Everyone else, well, they're not really people anyway. So.
Got it. Okay. All right. That makes sense. I think we're going to go with that direction.
I think people who laugh are not on the right side to be brought together.
Mm-hmm. Oh, and scene, ladies and gentlemen. A little too realistic for me. I honestly feel like this is what an SNL writer's room looks like these days. And after you see this clip from a recent SNL episode, you might feel the same way too. They decided to recreate a scene with Big Bird and Joe Rogan featuring the one and only Pete Davidson. Let's give it a watch.
I used to host Fear Factor, and now doctors fear me.
Can you help me, Joe?
Oh, sure thing, Big Bird. You see, I took Carlos Mencia down. I could take COVID. Here's some zinc and ayahuasca and some horse medicine.
Well, why would a bird take horse medicine?
I'm a human, and I took horse medicine. And I'm speaking of things that are horse-like. Today's two sponsors are the letters S and D, as in I can S my own D.
Oh, let's pause it right there. Before we get into commentary on this, let me go ahead and introduce Daniel. Oh.
I thought this was Taylor. Honey. Just looking a little bit different.
Right. Yeah, I woke up feeling a little strange.
I felt, it's like Freaky Friday.
I felt strange, but in a good way. Much better than the old Taylor.
I don't know if I want to hear any more about that.
No, as long as it's in a good way.
let's not act like I'm not in the room.
Yes. My gosh. Taylor is still here. Wow.
There's
Taylor
some voice in the back of the room. I don't know who that
I'm having an out-of-body experience.
Now, Daniel does work for PragerU, although not in our LA office, in Little Rock. Can you tell everybody a little bit about what you do?
Yeah, I'm from Little Rock, Arkansas. And that's why I said howdy. Even though I don't like that term, I find myself using it because it's very warm and friendly.
It is.
Like,
howdy.
Like Arkansas. Like, you know, people that live in California, I don't know.
It's different.
It's like you get here and everyone is so concerned about looking cooler than everyone else that you just walk around like you're in a Forever 21, you know, at a mall with a bunch of angsty people.
Right.
That's why you got to talk about Will like that.
That's pretty much that.
That's
pretty much California in a nutshell. But you go to Arkansas and it's like nobody cares, you know.
Right. Everybody's just there. They got hospitality.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you just kind of walk around and say howdy and stuff like that.
And y'all.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So what are you doing for PragerU in Arkansas?
Yeah. So that's a rabbit trail. How would we talk about that? So we actually started a studio in Arkansas, Little Rock, for the kids team, for the new PragerU kids content. So right now we are filming TBH, the history series for kids, but not just for kids, for everybody, because everybody likes it.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And so that's what we're doing. We have a small team over there, mostly doing the history series right now, but also working on some other series that we can't tell you about at this point, because either for one, we're not actually doing it and I'm just BSing, or for two, it's actually going to be really amazing and we can't talk about it yet.
That's okay.
So I'll let you decide which one of those.
Your stuff is really good, man.
Thank you.
It is.
Appreciate it.
And we are going to show some of his stuff later on in the show. But yeah, that's Daniel. So if you're saying who's this new face on the show, Daniel's here visiting us in LA for a little bit. So we figured let's have him on the show. Now let's get into this SNL skit because there's just so much wrong. So much wrong. And we've covered SNL before because they had a segment with Cecily Strong playing Goober the Clown, talking about abortion and how clown abortions are normal. 1 in 3 clowns get an abortion. That sort of fun stuff. Their comedy isn't comedy anymore. It's just ideology. That's simply all it is. And in this particular segment is just amazing because we see them go after Joe Rogan. Joe Rogan, as you all know, a very famous personality, has this Joe Rogan Experience podcast. He got COVID. I've never seen the internet cheer more for somebody getting sick and put out more tweets about wanting somebody to die. Mm-hmm. And that happened with Joe Rogan as... He talked about his kitchen sink cure that he went through with the zinc and the ivermectin, these medications that have been looked into when it comes to treatment of COVID and were prescribed by a doctor. But according to SNL, it's horse medicine.
Well, horses might use it, but it's been given to 3.7 billion people since it was invented, ivermectin.
And won a Nobel Prize.
And won a Nobel Prize. Right. Well, the creators won a Nobel Prize in 2015 for creating it. You know, it should be in every major country. It treats parasites, treats malaria, all sorts of things. I mean, it's in some ways a miracle drug, according to a lot of doctors and scientists out there.
Right.
Say that you, I don't know why they're so against it. Well, I do know why they're so against it, but I will not utter those words here. But I understand why they're so against it, but wouldn't you want... If you had a cheap and easy solution, if we lived in a good country, wouldn't you want a cheap and easy solution for people? If this virus is so dangerous and it's killing all these people and you had a solution that actually was helpful and worked and was good for people, wouldn't you want that cheap and easy solution to be so widespread for everyone?
Bro, that's unreasonable.
It is unreasonable. It's also racist.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Uh-huh. Well, I don't think we even need to say that anymore at this point. Right. This is kind of a given. Yeah.
It's a Nazi drug.
You know, I don't understand the obsession with just because it's good for a horse. What does it suddenly means it's toxic for a human?
Right.
Like horses eat stuff that humans eat.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
When I was a kid, I used to eat grass. I did that.
And I'm still here to tell the tale.
Is that an apple that you have? You're eating horse food?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What in the world?
It's the conflation of these two things, and it's all in an effort to dissuade people from getting accurate information. And that's what they do, and they will do it until the cows come home or until the horses come home. In this case, it's just ridiculous. And we saw the same thing with CNN and all these mainstream media outlets coming after Joe Rogan saying he's taking horse medicine. You saw Dr. Sanjay Gupta go on the Joe Rogan Experience and get confronted about it. Joe said, "You know that the ivermectin that I took was prescribed by a doctor. It is a human dose. It is the human configuration of the drug. How dare your network say that I'm taking horse medicine?" And he had no defense of it. No defense whatsoever.
There you don't need a defense. They don't need a defense.
Right.
None of these people need a defense because they can just label you and say, "Oh, this is horrible. It's for horses." And they don't have to actually give any reasoning behind why it doesn't work. Right? They don't have to, because then as well, the people who are on Facebook, these independent fact checkers, these people don't have to give you a reason. They just say this is false information and they go to the CDC website to get real information. And what does it say on the CDC website? It just says get vaccinated. It doesn't tell you all these things about ivermectin and how it's horrible for you or anything like that. It doesn't say that. It tells you just to get vaccinated and that's the best thing to do. It's like when Dennis had COVID and instead of him saying, "Hey, I want to get natural immunity. This is fine. Everything's good." They said, "No, this is horrible. You should want the vaccine immunity more than you want natural immunity." Makes no sense. It's natural. It's safe. It's fine. And you're telling him that is the wrong way to go. It is the complete opposite of what you should be doing.
Yep. Yeah. And the heart of this ideology is that it's very cultish. And if you are questioning that or don't believe that, let's look at some possible ornaments that you guys can have on your Christmas tree this year. Look at this beautiful one. Dr. Fauci, the physician pandemic COVID-19 tree ornaments. In case, you know, your tree wasn't scary enough, you need a little spook, you need to bring back Halloween a little bit, you can put Fauci.
I think if you put that on your tree, Santa would not come visit.
Oh, but Dr. Fauci said he went and vaccinated Santa. So
no, not suddenly, my Santa.
Dr. Fauci got a little more diverse somehow in this ornament situation.
Yeah, I know.
He's looking a spray tan.
He's looking a little.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
Santa, why are you coming down the chimney with no mask on?
So I
got your booster shot, Santa.
Yeah. Milk, cookies, and booster shots waiting out for Santa as soon as he comes in.
I'm a little confused because I don't know if this is like a tribute to Dr. Fauci or like an insult, you know?
This is a tribute.
I think it's a tribute. It's
an unmasked tribute. You better put him 6 feet away from the gingerbread ornament because he's going to be spreading COVID.
There's literally a growth coming out of his head. Like, how is that?
You know,
I think if this is a tribute, they missed the mark a little bit. Well, like, he looks like a human pinata.
Let's see if they hit any other marks. This is Jesus laying in the manger.
With a mask on.
With a mask on.
Oh my gosh.
Baby, a newborn Jesus baby. Has a mask. Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
Wow.
Jesus, Mary, and Joseph, yeah. All masked up.
See, Jesus had to be born in the little stable because mm-hmm. he wasn't allowed in the hospital because he wasn't vaccinated.
Right. That is exactly so, what but happened.
He wasn't born vaccinated.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Oh, you weren't born vaccinated, Jesus? Are you really the Son of God? Because I think God would be vaccinated.
This is right. what you're missing. This is what you're missing. What? This is a big, big takeaway here. He was born in hay. You know what? You know what eats hay?
Oh, no.
Huh?
No.
No.
Need I say more?
No, I
need
know.
I say
I
more?
Understand.
Okay. Okay.
You don't That's need fine. To say more. Let's move on to the next one here. Mr. and Mrs. Claus, all masked up and fully vaccinated.
202? What is 202?
2021.
Oh, the vaccine is a one. Okay.
Okay.
I didn't
Come
care.
On, Will.
I thought that was like
that was bad.
202 booster shots.
I was thinking, what is two gear two? You know?
Yeah, no. Now they're... That's the zero is a little COVID.
Okay.
It's a little virus.
Oh.
I don't know if you noticed that. And you know, the one is a vaccine. So, Santa and Mrs. Claus are fully vaccinated, which means they can go through the air travel to get you your presents, kids.
It means they can go to Universal and still have to wear a mask, even though you're mm-hmm. vaccinated.
Right.
Because that's a thing I'm slightly bitter about still. Has nothing to do with this, though, so let's
move
on.
The bad kids are the unvaccinated ones, and instead of cold, they just get the jab.
Mm-hmm.
Santa comes, and in your sleep, mm-hmm. gives you the jab.
Oh, goodness.
And this last one here, like I just said, this is Santa carrying around in his satchel vaccines.
You better watch out.
You better not cry. You
I'm
better
boosting
not
you up. I'm not going to tell you why.
Santa Claus is coming to town. It's just amazing. This has really infiltrated every part of our culture so pervasively. And I'm wondering when it's over. You know, Bill Maher on his show said, this is over. He declared it. He goes, COVID is over. You either tell me I need to be vaccinated and I can go back to my normal life and let me do that, or... You know, it's done. It's done. I'm not going to sit here and subscribe myself to your delusion anymore. And I think that's how we all feel right now. Mm-hmm. But it's everywhere.
But also, I mean, Santa's supposed to be carrying around things that you actually want.
Yep.
Mm. He's supposed to be a present.
Yeah. Mm.
That's what's even worse.
Yep.
Yeah. And he doesn't give presents to old people.
No.
Like, everyone knows that.
That's
Santa's
true.
Done with old people.
Uh-huh.
In fact, he's bitter at old people because most of them stopped believing.
Wow. You know?
You know who actually needs vaccines? Children. Because
mm-hmm.
they're the ones at risk.
Mm-hmm.
They're the ones at risk.
Mm-hmm.
That's why Santa and his little elves
right.
make vaccines.
I don't think the fact checkers can check sarcasm. So I think that might actually help us here.
Right.
Bro.
Those 5 to 11 year olds, they're really at risk.
Uh-huh.
Dude,
Baby
they're going to love us.
At risk.
This may be the first video that doesn't get shadow banned.
I know, probably.
And I'm here to save this podcast.
Thank you.
Single-handedly.
Thank you so much. I appreciate
yes.
that.
I think, honestly, you've already done it, Daniel. So.
Yes, thank you.
We might have to move you here permanently.
Okay. Wow.
You can like live in this space.
Yeah. All right. We'll talk about that later off camera.
Now okay. let's get into an update. We told you at the beginning of this trial that we would be following everything with Kyle Rittenhouse and the trial, this very contentious trial, the salacious case of Kyle Rittenhouse and the subsequent death of two people and the injury of one after he was personally attacked in the streets of Kenosha and responded to said attacks. Now the trial is going into closing arguments. The defense and the prosecution will lay out their case, one for convicting him, the other for not. And we will see how he's received. But here's a spin. Now, the judge, who has been just unmistakably reasonable in this case and really, really a paragon for what it means to be a judge in America and how to uphold the law and uphold it rightfully and justly. I've been really impressed with the judge in this trial in particular. He has dismissed the charges, the weapons charges, which for me was, I thought, the one charge in this case that would see the possibility of sticking to 18-year-old Kyle Rittenhouse. This is great news.
Does it say the reason why the judge did the assault weapons charge?
Let's take a look. The charge, possession
charge
of a dangerous
possession.
Weapon by a person under 18 was punishable by up to 9 months in prison and a $10,000 fine. Rittenhouse now faces 5 felony charges, and if convicted of the most serious charge, could face mandatory sentence to life in prison. Let's see. He dismissed the misdemeanor charge against Kyle on Monday prior to starting the closing arguments of the homicide trial. After dismissing the charge, Judge Schroeder issued instructions to the jury of the five remaining charges that stretched over an hour, yet he stopped midway through to discuss with the attorneys further and noted how convoluted the instructions are. Oh, this is obviously CNN. Mm-hmm. So they're saying this judge is ridiculous to throw out such a
Unbelievable.
Case.
Unbelievable. Well, here's what's funny, okay, because now, because how the trial is looking and how it seems like it's going to go, Kyle Rittenhouse is going to be acquitted. Mm-hmm. That seems like how it's going to be, which is awesome. But because of that, they are sending 500 troops of the National Guard out to Kenosha, Wisconsin. And it's like, if they would have done that when this first happened, when all these riots were happening, the reason why Kyle Rittenhouse was out in the streets, if they would have done that the first time, none of this would be happening because the National Guard would have taken care of these violent protesters going around destroying their city. Right. But because they didn't do that this time or the last time, now they have to do it now. Now they have to do this now. And we've had all this debacle and all this hatred and division, all of this, because the people who are supposed to be in charge of keeping our city safe did not do that. They didn't do that because they put politics above safety. And that's a really disgusting and sad thing.
Yeah, I mean, I was on the news today talking specifically about the Kyle Rittenhouse trial. The responses from Facebook, GoFundMe, LeBron James, Ben and Jerry's, which we will get into their responses. You know, this happened over a year ago now. This was last year during the riots in Kenosha. And subsequent to this incident, we saw Facebook ban anybody who was putting out statements in support of Kyle Rittenhouse. We saw GoFundMe ban any sort of fundraiser for legal representation for this young man who was 17 years old at the time. We saw a complete and utter mischaracterization of him, of the actions of that night by mainstream media. He was labeled a white supremacist extremist before anybody had the details in regard to this case. So a year of that, a year of labeling the 17-year-old boy as an extremist who wanted nothing more to go out and murder people, and you think you're going to get a fair trial after that? After the entire American public has heard about how horrible you are and has heard no other opinion because they've censored every other opinion? How do you even find an unbiased jury for a case like that? It is completely unfair. And if he gets an acquittal in this case, it will be by the grace of our legal system, which will show how intact it is by the end of this. It's just ridiculous. So yeah, here's some further details here. Apparently, the judge was sort of taking into account the lesser and more extreme charges in this case. And what he said is, in the conference on Friday about jury instructions, the judge told Rittenhouse, presenting lesser offenses to the jury lowers the possibility of a second trial, but increases the risk of an outright conviction in these cases. So that's why he wanted to take into account the lesser offenses here, and why he took off that gun charge, the weapons charge.
It makes sense. I mean, that's the way that it should be.
What do we know about this judge? Like, are they trying to crucify him? Is he?
No, he's actually.
We'll see
been
what happens once it all gets taken care of.
So
you
far,
we'll understand. Yeah. There was the guy, the George Floyd's cousin, I believe. Do you guys see this? Where he was making videos about going and doxing some of these jurors and things like that. I mean, crazy. Mm-hmm. Where's the FBI on that? Where's the FBI investigating something like that? That's not happening, right? This guy's just allowed to freely go make these videos and try and dox jurors. I mean, all of this is just so messed up. Again, if they would have just had National Guardsmen in Kenosha, Wisconsin to stop rioters, none of this would have ever happened.
Here's my
question.
The
FBI's busy investigating anti-CRT parents in Virginia.
Right.
So right. Oh, that's they've true. Got their hands Domestic up. Terrorists. Yep. Don't say parents. These are terrorists.
Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, to answer your prior question, this judge has been very sensible in this case. So far, he has made a very, very upstanding effort to protect the jurors in this case, keep them from being doxxed, keep them from getting any sort of outside bias from this particular case. Mm-hmm. He's gone as far as to say that the prosecution is not unable to call the people that Kyle Rittenhouse shot, killed, or injured. They're unable to call them victims because in this case they were attacking Kyle, and Kyle did act in self-defense. And he's also come after the prosecution on many different occasions for them making mischaracterizations of Kyle. So
did you see what the lawyer was drinking?
No.
In the trial?
What?
He was drinking soy milk.
That doesn't surprise me at all.
It was quite telling. He was chugging down soy milk.
He was
it's like
to
this
give
trial
to,
has made some of the best memes.
He was supposed to give that to Santa.
Yeah, he was.
The vaccine Santa.
Uh-huh.
He drinks soy milk.
He does.
Just
he does.
For the children at home. Don't get that wrong this year. Mm-hmm. If you want your vaccine under the Christmas tree.
Yep. Soy milk.
Yeah.
Gluten-free cookies.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So this National Guard, I just want to ask this real quick. They're sending out the National Guard. Excuse my ignorance on this, but
that's okay.
I kind of wonder if this is sort of a... They weren't sending out the National Guard before, okay, right. when the riots were going on.
Right.
Is this sort of a temper tantrum where they're like, okay, now we're going to send the National Guard, blah, 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 or is there actually a real need for it? Like, is there
It's hard to tell. You know, there are a lot of things that happen, like when other trials were taking place and we boarded up buildings here in Los Angeles, and then some of them came and got destroyed, some of them didn't need it, you know? And so it's hard to tell whether or not the National Guard will be needed. You know,
more of a safety measure kind of precautionary.
I don't want to make a mountain out of a molehill.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think it's good that they're coming, right? Yeah. It's better to be safe than sorry. Mm-hmm. And in the past, they were not safe. And then they were sorry.
Right. Yeah.
You know, so I think it's a good thing.
Okay.
I think it's a good thing. Okay. As long as they actually do their job.
Right.
I think it's a good thing. Because sometimes they send these guys out and then they don't do their job.
Dude, it's sketchy. You know, you start sending out the National Guard. It's like, okay, what's going on here?
Right.
You know, it just doesn't feel right for soldiers to be out on the street.
Right. You know, I know. Right. But these people are like, if they don't get their way, they're going to probably potentially destroy their own city again.
And it's looking like they're not going to get their way here. And I hope it pulls through. Another piece in the propaganda machine that has chosen to weigh in on this trial is Ben and Jerry's. Who would have thought it? The same Ben and Jerry's that released ice cream and statements about
Israel
voter suppression. Yeah, refused to start to keep selling their products in Israel or Israeli controlled territory. The same ice cream company that made a personal ice cream for Colin Kaepernick and his fight for social justice. They've come out and weighed in on the Rittenhouse trial, saying the Rittenhouse trial displays yet again that our justice, quote, air quote, system is racist. How would this trial be going if he was a black 17-year-old that crossed state lines illegally carrying an AR-15 and shot three white protesters? Not protesters, rioters. And we need real justice in the legal system. This isn't it.
Cross state lines illegally. Dude, it was like 20 minutes away.
It was 20 minutes, and his father worked in Kenosha. It's not like he had no association to this place at all. Gosh, a 20-mile drive that he took to get there. It's just ridiculous.
I have a question.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Why is Ben and Jerry's talking about this at all? Aren't you supposed to just like make ice cream?
That's what you would hope.
And make people happy and bring people together. Like, that's the one thing that the left and right can agree on, that we like ice cream.
I actually don't really like ice cream.
Well, I do like ice cream.
You're not a human.
No,
I'm not. Subhuman.
Of course, Will would have a take like that.
Yeah, I just don't like ice cream.
No, I come from a family of sensitive teeth.
Oh my goodness.
So ice cream like hurts my teeth.
Wow. You know, you can just bypass the teeth.
Just swallow it.
Yeah.
Or just like, you know, I think put it in your mouth and not. Yeah.
I think that's called like
it touches my teeth.
Not to chew it.
It's a milkshake. Yeah, use a straw.
No, I like milkshakes.
Goes straight into your esophagus.
He does like ice cream in that sense.
Beside the point.
We're derailed. Yes.
Why? Why Ben and Jerry's? Why?
Yeah, I mean.
Why are you talking about this? Just make ice cream, please.
Because we've told everybody that you can't do that anymore. That as a company, you need to take a stance. I don't want to buy Hot Cheetos if you don't tell me that you're hot for Black Lives Matter.
Here's the thing.
Nice.
Even if Ben and Jerry's was saying something that conservatives liked, it's still annoying.
It is.
I kind of disagree with you.
I think it's annoying either way.
I understand.
Come on, Will. Let's have a fight. Let's do it.
We gotta talk. It out.
You
Duke
gotta communicate.
I'll have you, Long Shanks.
Yeah.
No, I think it's okay if corporations want to put out their political leanings. I think that is totally fine. I don't think that it's necessary.
As long as they're conservative.
No, because now I know not to ever buy Ben and Jerry's again. Now I know I should boycott Ben and Jerry's.
Yeah, but you know? It's politicizing everything. Yeah. Even ice cream.
Right.
Yeah.
There is nowhere that's safe.
Here's the thing.
Like the greatest emotional food you can eat is ice cream. That's what women. Okay. Probably some men do it too. I'm sorry.
No, but.
All the women at home. But it's a classic, you know, the girl eating out of the tub with the spoon and she's sobbing because she just got broken up with.
Right.
That's ice cream for people.
Yeah.
And now they just put a big political poop right in the middle of that ice cream.
So imagine how politics now, like we'll talk about this all the time. Politics now is not just about the politics. I mean, it is a war on values. It is not just, hey, here's my economic thing that I believe in. It is a certain set of values that you will have that is different than another person, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So if a corporation comes out and has a different set of values, then that is different than them putting out a political opinion, right? And if these leftist companies like Ben and Jerry's are going to come out and say, hey, we support Black Lives Matter and this stupid stuff and all that, then I want other companies to come out with their values being conservative, right? It's like, it's better to have none You're right. But if the left is going to do it, then the conservative companies have to do it.
Okay.
To push back against it.
Okay. So we're just on the defensive.
So instead of just saying, oh, I'm just going to be a company that doesn't say my values, there's leftist companies and there's other companies, you should be like, no, there's leftist companies, then there are companies that really support your values, right? And then those companies will be bolstered.
Yeah,
those companies do get bolstered.
I get that argument as like only in response to the insanity that we have to deal with. But it's just like, where do you seek solace from politics if you don't want it anymore?
Yeah,
like we get enough of it on a day to day basis. You and I, we come into work every day. Daniel gets to work on kids content, so his political intake is a little smaller than ours.
Yeah,
but have to be inundated with it all day long. And if I want to go home and eat ice cream without seeing Colin Kaepernick's face on it, I mean, I would like that to be the situation that we're in. But it seems like increasingly these corporations, these people who do nothing more than create products and commodity, feel the need to put their political beliefs on that commodity.
Okay. So, well, I need to clear something up with you. This is deep philosophical stuff.
Yes.
This is the good stuff. Okay. Mm-hmm. This is stuff that the people want to know and see. Mm-hmm. So do you think conservatives should get down in the ditch, dirty, and fight the way the left fights? Or should we take the moral high ground and fight in our own way? And that is not a trick question. I think that's very honest question.
Right. And you have to play like the left in many ways.
Okay.
You definitely do. Because they will steamroll us and win in every single thing.
You got to get dirty. You got to bite them on the ankle when you're down there.
Well, not necessarily that. I think there's a way that you can fight like a leftist, how many of them fight, without being immoral or dirty. It's like I was just listening to church this weekend, and it was talking about, you know, if you achieve greatness or you're glorifying God, but you had to lie to do so, it's unforgiven by God. It's a sin that is unforgivable by God, actually. Mm. So it's like premeditated sinning almost. And so like you can't get to a level where you're doing immoral things for the greater good or for the bigger picture.
Yeah.
But what you can do is in the sense of fighting like a leftist, that leftists have in a lot of ways no shame about what they say.
Yeah.
They're not scared to put their beliefs out there. They're not scared to pick a fight with someone who they really disagree with. Mm-hmm. They're fine with putting it on an emotional and moral plane instead of just like an economic or factual plane. Like when I say fight like the left, I think those are the things that we can do. I think that we can be more like leftists in how we stand up, because you know, a Ben and Jerry's, you know how simple it is for them to do that tweet, because no conservative will fight back like them. They can just put out that tweet and it's so easy for them.
Okay.
Right? Whereas if conservatives should be like that, they should just be like, screw you. Yeah. I'm going to say whatever I want.
Yeah.
And if you don't like it, well, that sucks for you.
Yeah.
That sucks for you. You know, that's like what we need to be more like, instead of the coy people who kind of look back and we're like, oh, we don't want to be like the left. You know, it's like, we need to be more like that. We need to be more standoffish in some things, for sure. And more brave.
And I'll add here too, that like the reason that this is happening is because the people who hold institutional power, like Ben and Jerry's is a nationally established brand. Everyone knows it. It's in every grocery store, gas station, 7-Eleven in America. And what they're doing is they know they have institutional power, a foothold in the culture, and they're choosing to use that foothold and the power that they have to be activists and to become activists for specific leftist policies and ideologies. So they're not leaving us room not to fight back and not to try to create some other brand or to send a message to them that says, hey, if you don't like the politicization of everything, then send a message to Ben and Jerry's and say, we don't like the way that you're politicizing this. Same thing with sports and the NFL and like everywhere that ground, like I agree with Amala that it is lamentable that we are losing those shared spaces in our culture, and that there is no safe place to go to where the politicization is not advancing and taking it over. But I agree with Will too, that you can't just use that as, you can't just be like, well, I wish that that wasn't happening, so I'm just going to ignore it. Or
exactly.
We do need to take the steps to fight back, and we do need to fight fire with fire in that case. But that doesn't necessarily mean that we need to compromise our morals and standards and resort to doing the ugly stuff.
Dirty
stuff.
Right.
Man, it freely sucks, man. I mean, I go home and I'm like, you know what? I want to watch a movie. If you watch anything created in the past 5 years, you're getting propaganda. Yeah. And it's like, you guys follow us on Instagram, follow Will at the Will Whitney, at the Amala Epinobi. Daniel, do you want to be followed on Instagram?
No, don't follow
me. Okay, don't follow Daniel on Instagram.
Taylor, follow the Freedomists on Instagram.
Yeah, follow the Freedomists.
Freedom ISTS. Do it and do it now.
But it's like, I go home, I'm like, oh, I just want to watch a show. And I just started watching a new show the other day, Love Life, a show that I liked by HBO, and I'm watching it. It's just like propaganda, COVID propaganda, black propaganda, racism. It's just like, oh my gosh, give me a break. Like, give me something that I can consume and watch to just relax and watch something.
Okay. Activism is literally everywhere. You have activist ice cream, activist comedy, SNL, where they just say their propaganda and then play a laugh track after it. And then it's activist Disney with their what they're doing with Star Wars. There's activism in journalism where they're masquerading as journalists, but they're really activists. It's literally just they're all possessed by this ideology and they're trying to pump it everywhere they can. And don't get me started on academia as well.
I know. Okay. I get like people coming up to my events and they're like 10 years old and they're like, I love you, Will. I'm like, why? Right. I'm like, you're a child.
Right.
Well, why do you love these ideas? That's just a humble brag. We don't need to hear that.
I get millions of people coming up to me and they're just like, I love you.
Millions of 5-year-olds.
Bro, that wasn't even a humble brag. Yeah. That was just an outright
like
brag.
David Prager, like he talks about like he has an 8-year-old son. And he asks him and he's like, his son loves the PragerU videos and all this stuff. Yeah. And he's like, why do you love, you know, these conservative values? And he's like, low taxes. And he's like, you're 8 years old, man. Wow. Why do you like low taxes? You know,
that's
it means nothing to you.
It's
like so crazy, you know, and I don't think that's a bad thing. I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. If the left is going to do it to kids, then the right needs to do it to their kids.
Okay. So let me cut in real quick.
Yep.
Sure.
Okay. Stop talking over me. You know, you people are rude. You people are rude. I don't like this anymore. This is about me. This is my day. Just kidding. Okay. I really liked what you were saying. Well, I liked your answer about the philosophical approach of do we fight like the left or do we fight our own way? I don't think it's as simple as one way or another, but I do think you brought up a very important distinction is in some ways that the left fights, it's extremely effective. Mm-hmm. And I think pretty well any open-minded person can admit that the left has done a better job at communicating their message than the right. The is not very good at communicating their message in an emotionally, you know, provocative way or in a way that really resonates with people. And so there are certain things that the left is doing that we definitely need to fight back on their turf, in their way, and do it even better than they're doing. Mm-hmm. But then there's other ways where the left is just obviously irrational and fighting dirty. And what I see the right doing a lot of times is we are fighting back in the bad ways that they're fighting and not in the good ways that they're fighting a lot of times.
Right. Yep.
So we get all upset about how stupid the left is and they're like this and they're like that and they're always yelling. And a lot of conservatives are equally stupid.
Right.
It just so happens to be that 100%. They grew up on the right side of the philosophical aisle and that was the way that they were raised. But when it comes to like immaturity and narrow-mindedness and a complete just building walls between you and people that don't agree with you, sometimes a lot of conservatives can be just as guilty. And so those are the areas where we need to become more aware of. We don't have to fight their fight in that way.
Right.
But we do need to get better at thinking outside the box and actually how do we, you know, use some of the good tactics that they're using to actually be emotionally compelling and use storytelling and stuff like that, which 100%. Is one reason I love PragerU because I feel like you guys have that and we have that approach. A little bit more unconventional, but I just wanted to, that's my soapbox, but I liked your answer.
I think the problem is that a lot of conservative people will try and rebrand conservatism in some ways too, that it's like, oh, you know, we see how the left is doing it. The left reaches so many young people, the left reaches movie stars and Hollywood and stuff and music industry. And so they say, you know, we need to make conservatism cool. You know, we got to make conservatism cool. And then they sacrifice what conservatism or just even, you know, American values, they sacrifice or biblical values, they sacrifice those things in the hopes of being cool, you know? And it's like, that's not what I meant when I said fight like a leftist. Okay. We're not trying to make this cool. All right. You want to make the traditional values that we actually believe in cool. Okay. But don't sacrifice those things to make it just so that it's cool. So you can get a bigger tent type of thing. It's like, it doesn't have to be, you know, something, especially like conservatism, which focuses so much on personal responsibility. Mm-hmm. That's not a very attractive message to a lot of people just inherently. Mm-hmm. So that's not going to be something that is, you know, always going to be super cool, you know? So, but it's about marketing those values and keeping them as real and as original as intended.
Yeah.
And then not sacrificing them to be cool or a wall builder or whatever.
Here's the thing. Cool is a great tool, but it's a horrible master.
Yeah.
And when people start making cool a priority, then you start watering down what you're saying. Right. And then the power of your message, it kind of is diluted and it it doesn't really go anywhere. Because if you're just going to fight the cool game, you're not going to beat the left.
Right, right.
They have all the cool stuff, and we're never going to be able to out-cool them.
Right.
So that's not our bread and butter. And right. I understand that. So that I appreciate you saying that. Right. That's good.
And as the left battles, they become increasingly more powerful. Somebody who's come out and made a really large rallying cry is Tim Pool. You might know him from his Timcast podcast that he does. Tim Pool's amazing. He's great. He's been running in this movement for quite some time. He made a very emotional appeal to conservatives, to free thinkers, to classic liberals about where we need to be in this fight. Let's watch that video.
These people are evil.
I'm asking myself, who?
Adam Goldman of the New York Times, evil. We've got to stop playing these games. Why? They want this country to burn. They want power, and they will get it by any means necessary, and they will use the power of the federal government to do it. I am looking at all of you right now, and I am telling you this. The police will kick your door in and bash your teeth out the moment Black Lives Matter protests you. We've already seen it happen. You think this is a joke? James O'Keefe's legal privileged communications were just given to the New York Times, and Adam Goldman, with a smile on his face, published it. He doesn't care about this country. He doesn't care about our norms. These people are at war with you, and they will burn your life to the ground like they're doing to Rittenhouse and like they're doing now to James O'Keefe because you dare oppose their power grab. This is not a joke, and it is getting worse. And in the next 10 years, as we enter the fourth turning and it escalates, it is going to get worse. James O'Keefe is a journalist. The federal government stole his privileged legal.
Yeah. Interesting, interesting stuff. I don't think I've ever seen Tim so angry in any of his videos, which is really interesting. This is surrounding the story out of Project Veritas and James O'Keefe. The federal government has gone in and stole documents, journalistic documents from James O'Keefe in an effort to really launch what I believe is going to be a massive witch hunt on him to get him convicted of some sort of crime and sort of take his voice out of the journalism market right now because he's saying things that they don't want to be said.
I think what Tim said here is really important. It's something that I've said a lot and included in my book and a lot of things is that just because it's not you now does not mean that it won't be you in the future. Mm-hmm. It's so easy to just look at something like Kyle Rittenhouse or James O'Keefe and be like, well, I'm not one of these people. Right. You know, who cares? I don't really need to do anything. I don't need to stand up because I'm not one of these people. But that person could be you. You think Kyle Rittenhouse thought he was going to be that person?
Right.
You thought James O'Keefe was going to be in this situation? You think when people say things about me online or journalists digging up things about me, whatever, you think that I thought it was going to be me? No, none of us think that these things are going to happen to us, but they do. And if we don't have people rallying around us to be that community of people with good values, then we're screwed, man. We're hosed. We are completely hosed. So just because it's not happening to you does not mean that you don't show your support. Yep. You have to show your support for the people who are on the front lines fighting these things, because otherwise it is all gone. It is all gone.
It is.
You will be next.
You will be. And that's like, you know, people never understand that portion of it. They seem so far removed from what's happening. They never think it's going to be them. They never think the knock is going to come to their door. And it's a really strange phenomenon that we have. And I think more than ever, we're seeing the bystander effect kick in, where everybody's recognizing the lunacy that is happening right now, whether that's in our media, with social media, in our school systems, everywhere. They're recognizing the lunacy, but so few people feel the need to step up and say something about it or do something about it. Mm. And maybe it's because they expect somebody else to do it. Maybe it's because they have no idea where to start. Maybe it's because they're scared of being canceled. But there is a fight, a huge one, and we are on the precipice of something far worse than anything we're experiencing right now. And right now it's bad. So you need to be brave enough to put your ideas out there.
I think that's true. So, okay, here's my response. And sure. I feel like there might be a lot of people that feel in this camp. Mm-hmm. When I first see this, my gut reaction is alarmist. And mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, this sounds a little over the top. This guy just wants the views. He wants the ratings. But then when you zoom out a little bit, mm-hmm. if you look at it like on a micro level, it seems kind of alarmist. Like, yeah, the police are probably not going to come to your door today mm-hmm. and kick your door down because mm-hmm. you protest Black Lives Matter or whatever it is. But like, I think the point you were saying, Will, is very important too, because if you just zoom out a little bit and look at the big picture, you realize that this is where it's headed. And we don't know how long it's going to take to get to that extreme, but the less people stand against it, the quicker that extreme is going to happen.
Yep.
And so, you know, you don't want to discredit yourself by making really extreme statements that aren't literally true in the moment, because mm-hmm. then people are like, oh, well, that's exaggeration. Yep. And this guy can't be trusted. He's just a lunatic.
Right.
But at the same time, realizing that this is really, really, really real stuff. And I think part of what gives you that understanding that this is where, you know, what he was saying is where things could be headed over a period of time is looking at history and realizing that, okay, this is not, it might sound a little crazy to us because we live in this American bubble and we've always had freedom and we've always had a police system that you can pretty well trust and a decent government. But for millions of people across the globe, that kind of stuff is happening right now. And yeah. this is the kind of stuff that's been happening all throughout history. And people will take as much power as you can, as they'll possibly get away with taking from you. And so I think a lot of people today are missing the historical context to the credibility of how serious this actually is and where this could go.
It's true. And through the past decades, everybody says, oh, well, the 1960s was when this all started. The seeds were planted for what we're seeing right now. Through the decades, we have received warning after warning after warning after warning. And I don't know how much more you need. I mean, we got it from China. We got it from Russia. We got it from North Korea. We've gotten it now from Australia. The warnings keep presenting themselves to people. And I will admit, yes, this is very alarmist. It was very visceral. It was very infuriated to watch that video. But it's real. It's real. And maybe the form of communication is not the best way to communicate it to people, because it rubs people the wrong way immediately. You see this guy who's just like, they're going to be at your door, you know?
It depends on who you're talking to,
right,
as well.
Right, absolutely. But the warning is real. And I just don't know how many more of them we need for people to go, okay, maybe I need to start speaking up.
I'll tell you what I do like. I do like how fiery he is, because mm-hmm. it's this sort of frog in the pot, slowly getting warmer and warmer and warmer. And we do need people to actually get fired up,
right,
and to really start, you know, waving a flag for, hey, this is serious. You know, eventually we do have to put our foot down in a big way. And so at risk of sounding a little alarmist, I think there still is a lot of value in, like, people really do need to get passionate about this.
And the value here is that if for anybody who is a fan of Tim Pool, he is not normally like that. He is he is a very, very even-tempered, sensible, reasonable man. To see him get that infuriated live on his show and to issue a warning and tell you you need to get active now is a very powerful thing to see, because that is not a man who is typically communicating his thoughts in that manner. Now, Daniel.
Yes.
You've presented yourself on this show. You've made some great points.
Yes.
You've done a great job. You don't typically do this form of content. Typically, you are making kids content for PragerU.
Yeah. Typically, I am either behind a camera pulling my hair out, or I'm in front of the camera wearing Washington's hair on my head, which I had to do. Let me rephrase that for all the executives watching, which I got to do.
Yeah.
What was that, last night?
Yeah.
Two nights ago.
Two nights ago.
I've totally lost track of time in the California vortex. Totally different style of content.
Right.
So our focus is history, and actually teaching kids history in a way that they can remember is the idea, in a way that's very impressionable. But TBH is the name of the series, and that's just a little, you know, Gen Z lingo for to be honest. And so the point of our history is that we want to be honest about the good and the bad.
Yep.
Not just excluding all of the bad. And obviously not excluding all of the good, like is being taught in most schools today. And I think if you just present truth, the fact that history is complicated, it's complex because it's made up of millions and millions of people.
Mm-hmm.
And there's nothing more complicated than a human and nuanced. And some humans, okay, all humans have good and bad. Mm-hmm. Some moments they look awful. Some moments they look amazing. If you take any one particular human being and focus only on their awful traits, and that's what you present to people, they're going to think that is the worst person that has ever lived, and you can crucify them. And you could probably do that with any of us in this room right now. But on the contrary, and you know, a lot of times what conservatives do, that turns off young people is only talking about the good. Mm-hmm. Good, 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 good. And the founders, they were good, good, good. So much so that you almost risk defending things that they did that were not good.
Yep.
And that really turns off young people.
Mm-hmm.
Because young people hate BS. And they're pretty good at detecting it most of the time. And so I think, you know, our approach and what we really want to emphasize is, let's just be honest about the good and the bad and let people make up their own minds. But also, we are pro-American and we're not ashamed of that. And so we will, we come at, you know, right now we're doing the
French. You find the truth is pro-American.
Well, yeah. I mean, it definitely favors America.
Mm-hmm.
And so right now we're talking about the French Revolution, and that video is actually going to go out, supposed to go out very soon.
Amazing.
Very
okay.
soon. I'm not going to say the date just in case it ends up getting changed. I don't want to get in trouble, but it will be very soon. But okay. So even though we're talking about the French Revolution, we're still coming at it sort of from an American perspective. So
through
we're
Benjamin
not
Franklin.
Yeah. We're
through Benjamin Franklin.
Well, yeah, he's definitely a big part of it.
Mm-hmm.
But we're not afraid to kind of tie in some takeaways from an American perspective. So like, as an example, the French Revolution is where the political left and right was born. In the National Assembly. So people that wanted to conserve their traditions more sat on the right side of the assembly, and the people that wanted radical change sat on the left side. And so that's where we get the terms left and right, happened in the French Revolution. But we don't just limit it only to talking about the French Revolution. We also bring application to how that applies to America.
Amazing.
And how the left and the right in America had its roots there as far as our terminology, but actually the left and right in America is fundamentally different than the left and right in the French Revolution, in France, and in most other countries, because our tradition is so different that what our conservatives are conserving is distinctly different than what the conservatives of France were conserving, because they had a king, and that was what they were conserving. We've never had a king. So we're not afraid to bring American application and admit that, hey, we love America.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not going to try to hide that, but we're also not going to sneak in a bunch of BS and try to act like everything is all just bright and cheery and America's history is just perfect and the founders were perfect.
Right, it's just
we're not going to do that.
It's just true.
Yeah.
It's just being honest, to be honest.
But
now,
also it's kind of ridiculous and we do a lot of ridiculous things. So,
which is why I feel like you guys need to see a little clip of what Daniel is cooking up over in Little Rock, Arkansas. Oh. I'm going to show a little bit of their recent episode of TBH History, focusing around a revolution.
Look at this photograph. What do you see?
From this perspective, it looks dark and depressing. But look what happens when we zoom out. A very different picture emerges.
A lot of people treat American history like this photograph. They zoom in on one particular part and build a fancy frame around it.
This one piece is what American history is all about.
But you will miss out on seeing the whole picture if you only focus on one small part.
Or in other words, you need accurate perspective to make accurate conclusions. History shows us that America is different from other countries, not perfect, but different in a really good way. But it's easy to take awesome things for granted until they're gone. Like your phone, and your money, and your electricity.
And an amazing country that provides liberty and equality for all people.
What's the big deal with that?
Well, the big deal is this thing called history.
The founders of America revolutionized the world by making a giant leap toward an ideal that all people have equal rights from God, that all men are created equal, and should be free to pursue life without the government's control. But in order to appreciate the leap that the founders made, we need to look at what life looked like before the revolution and what ultimately.
We need to look at what life looked like before the revolution. If you guys want to look at what life looked like before the revolution, you can go to PragerU.com, go to watch, click our kids content, and click TBH history.
Yeah.
That is Daniel's creative baby.
Well, we're just getting started, so don't expect a giant catalog of videos here.
Right.
But this is the most exciting time to get a part because to be a part because this thing is new and it's fun and we're coming out with new episodes, and so definitely jump on. You will enjoy it.
What does the process look like for you when you're creating a new episode?
Mass chaos. No, actually it's a process that we're developing over time, and I think the episodes are getting better as we go. But we work with a historian here.
Okay.
And then so we know that we're actually getting accurate information, and that's not on my shoulders, thank God.
Mm.
And then we take it from the historian and give it to a history teacher. And the history teacher kind of takes what the historian gave us and makes it a little bit more digestible. And then we bring it to our team in Little Rock from there and actually turn it into a script, write the scenes, do all the filming and editing on our end. So
amazing.
So yeah, it's not just a couple of like, you know, young guys who just want to try to be funny and making up history. You know, it's we really try to be careful about the integrity of what we're saying. We're not just pulling stuff out of thin air.
It is amazing. It is good content. I'm going to test one more skill on you, Daniel. Uh-huh. We've gone through political commentary. We've gone through kids content. We've gone through history. Now we're going to go through advice. And this is advice spanning relationships, friendships, politics, all that fun stuff. Yes. Here's Dear Will and Amala, our Monday segment. You guys submitted your questions through my Instagram at the Amala Epinobi, at the Will Witt, at Taylor Trandall. And we're just going to round table. We're going to rapid fire because I think we're getting to the end of our episode here. But Let's see who gives the best advice here. Dear Will and Amala, what is the best way to heal from a breakup? This was submitted by Doolittlew23.
Is Doolittlew a man or a woman?
I don't know.
Because you heal differently when you're a man versus a woman.
Okay.
A woman will cry. And a man should not.
That is which way to be a man, horrible though? Advice. That's horrible advice.
A man, listen, if it's a divorce, it's different, okay? This is a breakup.
Oh, my goodness.
Then you got to just be a man about it, okay? You break up. You go and do some things you enjoy. You go play some disc golf. Go play some real golf. You go hang out with your friends. You don't do anything stupid or irrational. And you pray on it. And you go to church. You do all the good things, you know? Don't cry.
Oh, my goodness.
Don't sit there and sulk about it. Just be a man.
Have you seen the Be a Man on TikTok? The Be a Man stuff?
Oh, yeah. No. Be a Man.
I don't know if this is one that exists, but it should be. It's get broken up with and don't cry.
Yeah.
Be a man. Yeah. They're hilarious. He's like, don't put chapstick on your lips. Let them crack and bleed. Be a man.
I don't use chapstick.
Be a man.
Yeah. Chapstick is feminine.
My goodness. No, it's totally okay for a man to cry after a breakup. Let me go ahead and clear that record and make that record straight. Yes, it is. No. It's totally okay. Taylor, do you want to weigh in or Daniel on this particular? You're allowed to cry after a breakup.
Well, mine will be short. I only have two words. And then Taylor, you can take the floor.
Okay.
Ice cream. Yeah.
Ice cream. Good one. But not
get a big tub of Ben and Jerry's. And yeah.
No, don't do that. That's not what you do.
Yeah. What do you think, Taylor?
I mean, I largely agree with Will. I saw him go through a breakup and I think he handled it like a champ.
You didn't cry?
As anyone can.
No, I didn't cry.
But at the same time,
I was dating that girl for a year and a half and I didn't cry. Yeah, and then, you know, I didn't do anything stupid. I just we had some friends over and had a good time.
Bro, that just proves the conservatives are shallow.
Because I didn't cry.
Yeah, yeah. You piece of trash.
Yeah,
you obviously
hated her.
The focal point should not be the fact that you don't cry.
Right.
I mean, if you happen to cry because I mean, it's okay. It's an expression of emotional pain. But I agree with Will that you shouldn't be like sulking and like you know beset by this for days on end where you're just like an emotional wreck. Like that. That's just weak sauce.
Right.
And so you know, if you shed a few tears, like okay, get over it, and let yourself feel the pain for a little bit, but like don't sulk in it and don't like
I don't know
be, yes you're oh no. My gosh,
I'm not saying that you should sulk in your relationship, but I think like a relationship is a really big thing and it's a big thing to lose depending on how long term it was, how influential this person is in your life, how concurrent they are in your life. It's a big thing when you lose somebody in a breakup. You're not just losing that person, you're losing the things that you did with that person. You are losing in large part the things that you associate with that person. You are now having to fill holes that a person was filling before they were, you know, when they were in a relationship
deal
with you.
Doesn't mean you have to sulk. Yeah.
No, but it's almost
be
like
a man.
Oh my goodness.
Get over.
I my grandfather passed away this summer and everything you just said about a breakup was true about my memories with my grandfather.
Yes.
And it was really sad. And when I found out it was very sad. I can't remember if I cried or not, but like at his funeral, I gave a speech and I was a wreck when I gave that speech. But after that, it was like there was a finality to it and I miss him and I think about him and I reflect fondly on him. But like, I know that I have a responsibility. If I want to honor his legacy and honor myself as a man, like I have to stand up and move on and like truck forward in life. And so I don't think that it's like healthy to sit there and think about how much this everything meant to you and all these memories
this
stuff.
Of course not.
It's, you know, process it, do what you got to do. But like the point is you got to move on and get up and be strong.
My advice is not to sulk.
You think it's more healthy. Let's get this on the record. Well, you think it's more healthy to just go play Frisbee.
Of course. Yeah.
Yeah, she broke up with me. I broke up with her. Whatever. You know what I should do right now? I should play some Frisbee.
Yeah. No. If that makes you happy, go play Frisbee.
Well.
Yeah, get your mind off
yeah,
of it.
Yeah, exactly. Well, for sure.
Well, okay.
I think Daniel and I are on the same wavelength on this
it's
one.
Like if you get a gunshot, you have to like spend some time in the hospital to like you could let it recover. And sitting there like poking at it is not going to make it you know, right. help
bro,
any faster.
Bro, so, but you still have to go to the doctor.
Your emotional way of recovery.
You yeah. have to get the bullet out of your leg before it infests and kills you later. You're going to be that hobbling man. You're going
to
be that hobbling man at the mall.
That's exactly.
Who's like,
that's how I feel.
Hey,
no.
Gosh, I should have got this bullet out 15 years ago.
That's if you need therapy after a breakup, then go get therapy.
Here's the thing. Here's the thing, Taylor.
But like sulking in it and like.
I think you view sulking and reflecting as way as two different things. I don't think you sit and cry.
What do you have to reflect on?
Well.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, have you.
You reflect on it. Like you reflect while you're going through life afterwards.
Yeah.
You know, like you learned lessons from the relationship. I don't need to sit there and like write down and be like, here's why.
Nobody's saying that you need to do that.
Well,
look at all your old pictures.
Yeah. Literally the day that me and my girlfriend broke up, I haven't looked at her Instagram since or any of the old
pictures. Nobody's saying that you do that.
That's what people do.
That's good. That's toxic masculinity.
Right.
Look, here's the thing. So have you heard of comprehensive manhood?
No.
Okay. Well,
I invented it.
Well, yeah. Me neither.
And it's perfect.
Me neither, but it's a... Okay, so this is what I think. I think a lot of men have been taught that being manly means that you cannot express your emotions. And I think because of that, a lot of men get their emotions all bottled up over years and years, and they try to suppress them. And then by the time they're in their middle ages, mm-hmm. all of a sudden they're all angry, and they're going to the bar all the time and stuff because they never dealt with their emotions properly. And so I feel like after you go through a breakup or something hard, let yourself cry for a while and then move on.
Well, I think that's more of a lack of, I think that's less about emotion and more about understanding past experience and understanding that past experience has lessons to tell and that you as a man can learn and change from those things. I think that's like the bigger problem. I think that men will have traumatic things happen to them. And instead of like saying, hey, this happened, I'm going to learn from it, they stick to their guns and say, no, I'm just going to be a man and not learn from it and keep doing the same
stuff
that I used to do.
What happens is you get bitter.
Yeah.
And bitterness eats you up.
Cynical.
And you get, yes. So I think it's both. You have to reflect and learn and learn from it and take away the good things so that you don't become bitter about it. But I think part of that process of letting go of those negative emotions is letting yourself kind of get it out, you know?
Right.
But it doesn't have to be like a year-long process where you're, you know, laying on the couch every day eating ice cream and looking at your ex's Instagram.
Yeah.
Nah, fam.
So we're split on this one. Daniel and I have a particular take. Will and Taylor have another.
Combined with manpower.
That was a good one.
Manpower.
That was a good one. Let's move on to our next question here. Dear Will and Amala, I have a leftist sister who is unaccepting of my white husband. She's called him a colonizer while drunk and said other degrading things to him and me. She's never apologized and acts like everything is okay when we see her. She's never really good with confrontation, usually plays the victim role. Leftist move. Should I confront her or is it okay to let her go from my life? Not entirely? Nadine Lynette.
You both just got to get hammered and then confront each other. And that'll be the best thing you could do.
Oh my gosh. You
know,
so full of great advice. I don't know.
You know, on the last round of advice, I thought you were really bad at giving advice.
Right.
Now?
Pretty good.
I don't know.
Even pretty worse. Good.
Okay, don't do that. But you should confront them. If you love this person, you almost have a responsibility to confront them about the way that they act. If they act in a way that, as a family member, is not conducive to being a good family member, then you should bring it up to them and tell them. You know, that's a hurtful thing to say, that your husband's a colonizer.
Yeah. And I think take an assessment on how it's affecting your relationship with you and your husband and the family as a whole. Because she's asking, do I confront? Do I let her go? You definitely confront before even talking about letting somebody go from your life. I think there needs to be a discussion and a conversation that's had, preferably with you, her, and your husband, in whatever order you do that, or you do it all in one room. That's what needs to happen. And I think at the end of the day, if she doesn't compromise on this, on calling your white husband a colonizer, that's probably a pretty contentious person to have around your husband. And you have to remember that you did choose your husband. You did choose this man and say, you know, my life starts with you now. We are going to build a family. We are going to build a unit. And if this sister is unaccepting of your husband, that's a pretty big problem.
For Thanksgiving, have him dress up as Christopher Columbus and come to the come to family dinner.
Right.
You want my advice?
Yes.
I didn't think so. That's okay. I don't have any advice. Actually, I'm just kidding. So I think in situations like this, this is going to sound really dumb and borderline Joel Osteen. Mm-hmm. But it's not. I say, ask yourself, because we don't know your situation. We don't know the details. We don't know the nuances. Right. Only you really know who you are and who she is and the situation. And so what I would say is, rather than giving you some specific advice, I would say, think about loving her and what does love do in this situation? Because a lot of times love means that you confront that person. If it's something that's hurting them, it's something that they need to know about, then I think it's, you should confront them. And sometimes love means holding your tongue and not being a jerk to that person.
Sure.
Too. So that's my advice.
Yeah, I don't think it should be met with any sort of hate. I think there's obviously a reason she feels the way she feels. A discussion just needs to be had. You guys got to hammer that out.
What would love do?
It's like in Romans.
WWLD.
When you love, it fulfills all the commandments.
And then love and humility, really. If you couple those together, that will pretty much give you the answer to almost any issue.
That'll save all your relationships, honestly.
Pretty much.
Here's your next question from Anna Jojo. How to handle being a strong and perceived intimidating woman, especially in relationships? This is honestly a question for the guys for the most part. How do you feel about women that come off as somewhat intimidating or strong-willed?
I'm going to be honest, I don't really get too intimidated by many women in that way.
Okay.
For them being strong or, you know.
But I think, like, when is it a turnoff to you when someone is, like, being overly like that?
It's only a turnoff to me when they say, like, oh, I'm stronger than men, you know, right, or I can do things that men can't. Like, I love a strong woman who comes and says, like, I'm powerful in my career, yeah, you do your thing, and I'm your number one fan, and we're together, and it's like, she's strong, and but she's not independent. She's so dependent on me.
I'm your number one fan?
Yeah, 100%. Why not? Of course.
I love when a strong woman says, I'm super independent, and by the way, I'm your number one fan.
No, do you get it? Okay, in a sense, listen, I can explain that. In the sense of, like, with what I do, is a lot of turmoil, scandal, people hate me, all sorts of stuff, and you know, I don't always say the right thing, and you want people who are going to be in your corner 100%. You want that person. So when I say number one fan, I don't mean literally like a groupie number one fan. I mean someone who's like my number one supporter in that sense. But yeah, I love it. I love it when a woman's strong and outgoing and super, super fun like that. I like that way more than the inverse of someone who is more shy or reserved or someone who just wants to be, you know, in the background. Like I want someone to be like with me going to do things. And people are like, oh, I loved her. Like, she was great. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah.
You know,
I think confidence is attractive in whatever form it takes.
Right.
And I think if you're someone who's extroverted and outgoing and you're confident in that, they're very attractive.
Right.
But what's unattractive and what's more of a turnoff to me is if you're going to start using that sort of confidence to trample over other people and not being loving and having a good spirit toward other people. Mm-hmm. That's more of an issue. But I think if you're just being confident and being who you are, and that maybe that's intimidating to some people, but I think it's very attractive.
A man who's intimidated by that is probably not the man for you. It's probably more of a red flag for him than anything that has to do with you.
He's unconfident.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And I always think, I think I've given this advice on the show before, intimidation or being like very strong-willed is typically a masculine trait. And I think women, what we do is we assess our femininity, we assess our masculine traits, and then we look for a man who supersedes the masculinity that we currently have, or the masculine, I don't know what you would call it, energy or prowess that we have. You would want a man who's a little bit more than what you are, because that just makes for a healthy relationship.
Like, I would want a wife if my school board was doing some stupid crap. I would want my wife to be like the first person in line going up to that school board and like speaking to them, right, you know, like like she sees like some guy on the side of the road, like ripping down an American flag, and she goes and she stops and she starts yelling at this person for ripping down. Like that's the type of person that you want.
Yeah. 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 Like, I want a fighter.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. You know,
One more question here. Dear Will and Amala from RyeDog619, how can I get better with my social skills in prolonging conversations? Were you guys ever socially awkward?
Yes.
Yep.
Is that a trick question?
Because you still are?
Yeah.
No, you're not at all.
That implies that
you're
I'm not.
You're not at all.
Yes and yes. I think the probably the best way to do it is stop thinking about yourself.
Mm-hmm.
If you focus on the other person and you're fascinated by them and you want to invest in them, you're automatically, magically going to become less nervous and less awkward, because when you're the most nervous and the most awkward is when you're thinking about yourself. And, oh, what do they think about me? And, right. Oh, what about this pimple on my forehead? My gosh, that's probably really unattractive. And I probably should have popped it better because I didn't learn how to pop pimples properly till I was like 18. And then at that point, I stopped getting pimples. It was pointless.
Wow.
Anyway. Yeah. But the problem is you're thinking so much about yourself that it makes you a wreck. And yep. If you just love people and focus on them and ask them questions about them and really listen, you're going to be fine.
Right. Like, go into this conversation saying, I don't know this person as much as I should know them. I'm going to get to know this person. And that's what you'll be thinking of. You'll be thinking, okay, well, what is this person's interest? Or, do we get along in this sense? How do they feel about this? It's like everybody is thinking far more about themselves than they're thinking about other people. And if you function with that as your reality and you perceiving that, you're going to be fine. And you're going to be more confident as soon as you say, I'm going to focus on other people. To be seen and to be heard is to be loved. And that's all that people want. So while you're in your mind thinking about, oh my gosh, what are people seeing? How are they perceiving me? Everybody else is doing the same thing. Mm-hmm. So step outside of that for a second and go, you know what? No, my purpose here is to get to know this other person. You'll be fine.
Yeah. The other thing is, Will, I'm sorry. Okay. You don't get to talk anymore. Just really quickly and then I'm done. The other thing is, totally forgot. No, the other thing is, pretend that you already know them.
Mm-hmm.
That is actually really powerful. And then realize that they don't care. Okay. They don't really care that much.
Yeah.
That's kind of a freeing truth that, like, maybe you have a pimple on your head. They don't care.
Yep.
They seriously don't. You're just a person that happens to have a pimple or whatever it is.
Right.
They really don't care. And when you're growing up, you feel like, oh, the spotlight syndrome. Everybody's observing me. All these things. No.
Every day in the mirror, right when you wake up, look at yourself in the mirror and say, I am not a loser. Every single day, okay? It'll boost your confidence. You're going to be a much better person.
Sure.
Thank you.
I mean, my thought experiment on this is, like, if you walk into a room of 50 people, and let's say you waltz right in, you go to the center of the stage or whatever, the center of the room, you trip and spill whatever you're carrying all over yourself. And that's just a miserable moment for you. That's something that will stick with you for years to come. You'll be thinking about, oh my gosh, how 50 people saw me do that. How long does it stick with the people in that room? An hour. They're not going to be thinking about that.
I've seen some people do some embarrassing things, and I will talk about it years
later. No, you don't.
I have, yeah.
But here's what you need to know. The kind of people that will ridicule you for something like that are not the kind of people whose opinions you should care anything about.
Exactly.
So it really doesn't matter.
Exactly.
What you have to do, you need to look...
Like Will.
Exactly.
You shouldn't care.
You need to look confident, okay? If you're walking around and you are, like, you're putting your shoulders forward and you're not looking like someone who actually is confident. Like, I will walk into rooms and see people who are, like, you can tell they look unconfident. You can tell that they are not, like, standing up straight and looking like someone who can actually hold a conversation, you know? But, and then you have people who walk into a room and they have that energy, they're charismatic, their shoulders are up straight, they're walking around with a pep in their, like, you have to physically make yourself more confident. It's not just about what you do. Like, think about it when you're walking around. Literally put your shoulders back. Have good posture and, like, go and be confident with the way you look.
Hey,
it really will change.
Who is it that asked this question?
Oh, what's the name on this one? Let me go and take a look.
Okay.
RyeDog.
RyeDog?
Yep.
Okay, RyeDog. If you want my opinion, which you don't because you didn't even ask me. But I'm going to piggyback off of what Will just said. And I'm going to tell you, with all of the earnesty in the world, because that is a word now.
Mm-hmm.
Because
I made it a word.
Go online right now. This is not an affiliated thing. This is not a sponsored thing. This is because I care about you and I want you to be happy and successful. Go look up the book, Get Off Your Butt by Sean Stevenson. Get off your B-U-T and it will change your life. Mm. It is a stinking good book that every single human being should read. We are not sponsored to say that. I am saying that because it's true and it piggybacks off of what Will says in a very, 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 very helpful way. Life-changing book. Just read that book.
Okay. Amazing stuff.
Okay.
And ladies and gentlemen, that is our episode of Will and Amala Live for today. Thank you so much for watching. Thank you, Daniel, for joining the program.
Thank you for letting me.
Hope you had a good time. Hope we haven't scared you.
I did. I hope I didn't interrupt Will too many times.
No, you're fine.
Not enough.
It's always okay.
Yeah.
It's always okay. As long as you interrupt Will. We'll be back tomorrow at 2:30 PST, 5:30 Eastern. You can check us out on Google Play, Apple Podcasts, or Spotify. If you want to listen rather than watch, leave us a 5-star review so that everybody knows that you love the show and that we know that you love the show, because everybody should be listening to Will and Amala Live. We're going to keep reaching you, coming back to you with some hot stories, and maybe this week we get an end on the Kyle Rittenhouse case. We will keep you up to date on that, and we'll see you tomorrow at 2:30. Bye, guys.